Woofing in a coal mine, woofing down, down, down. Woofing in a coal mine, woof, we're about to get down.
That was the most shambolic intro of the podcast so far.
Yeah, we'll cut that out.
We'll definitely cut that out. Thanks for not listening to that bit that we just cut out. Hi, welcome to the Bitter End Podcast. I'm Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
And we are here to watch and talk about The Howling 5 Rebirth.
Yeah.
We're over halfway through the series now, Tom.
That is true. So this is the first because is there Rebirth and then the...
This is Rebirth, and then later on in the series, there's going to be The Howling Reborn. So the birthing element of it won't quite take the first time.
And this is coming off of the back of the original Nightmare, which was the fourth film.
Yeah, there's been a lot of false starts to this.
We just want to keep on starting again and again.
Again and again and again. But hey, Tom.
Yeah.
Check this shit out.
Yeah.
We're not alone.
Oh, shit.
Can you hear... There's something coming.
What's that?
It's Ruth. It's our friend Ruth. Hi, Ruth. How's it going?
Hi. Going good, I think.
Well, excellent. I'm glad to hear it. So Ruth is here in the room with us. This is the first time we've had a guest actually be in the same room with us while we do the poddy. And Ruth, I'm really sorry to say, you're here as the ringer. You're our total like patient zero guinea pig. Let me ask you a question, Ruth. For the listeners at home, have you seen The Howling?
No.
Have you seen any of The Howlings?
No, none of The Howlings.
What's your favourite horror film, in fact?
I hate horror films of all kinds.
Have you seen any?
Not since I was sort of forced to as a teenager, and I think I've probably repressed all of that.
Have you seen any werewolf films?
No.
I am determined for us to turn you into a convert with this movie. I've got a strong feeling about this one, guys. I think this one is going to be a masterpiece.
Okay. Well, we just watched the trailer for it.
It looks like a masterpiece to me, man! So we watched the grainiest, most pixely trailer on YouTube to the point that Tom had to shrink the window down so that we could even see what was going on.
And I still couldn't really see what was going on. It looked like there was like a big... like a medieval feast kind of table laid out in a castle, which is very different from any of the other Howling films because they're not medieval.
No.
And everyone was lying around dead.
Yeah, there'd been like a feast or something. Everyone was drinking wine and they'd all just like died at the table.
I was just thinking, is this what Game of Thrones is like? Is that what it is?
Because
I haven't seen it.
It is a little bit like what Game of Thrones is like. And there was this baller guy. He was like lying on the ground and he was screaming in what I can only assume is like... old-timey speak, because they subtitled it, and he was going, God forgive us, God have mercy on us all, it was the only way. And then he went, the baby. And then the camera showed a pram, we heard a baby cry, and it said, Howling 5, Rebirth. What do you think, Ruth? Is your interest piqued?
I have no idea what to think.
I'm going to quiz you, okay? So sit tight. What do you know about werewolves in general? What can you tell me? Because this franchise might be playing fast and loose with your assumptions.
I don't know. I guess that they're humans that turn into wolves. Something to do with the moon?
The moon? Bullshit! Not in this franchise, mate! No. In the Howling franchise, in the films so far, right? I mean, you're kind of right. So in most of them, they're people that turn into wolves when they get scared... angry or horny, basically.
Or just feel like it.
Sometimes when they just feel like it.
Just basically whenever the plot dictates that there should be a werewolf, someone can turn into a werewolf. The full moon has no bearing on it.
We've had werewolves in the middle of the day. We've had a lot of, like, werewolf...
We've had werewolves in the middle of fucking Australia and Transylvania.
There was a good Transylvania one, yeah, we watched very recently. And a lot of, like, werewolf sex. Yeah, a lot of werewolf boning down.
Yeah, I think... Has every film had like a bit of a wolfy sex scene?
It's a little trademark of the series.
Yeah.
Are they wolves before they have sex, or does the sex make the wolf?
We've never had anyone have sex with a wolf and then have the wolf turn into a person, and they'd be like, "Ooh, this isn't what I signed up for." That's not happened
yet. Could be in this one though.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to find something to do. Like they're, you know, five films deep. They're kind of like, "Well, what do we do?
Speaking of the series so far, guys, before we get stuck into The Howling 5, The Rebirth. We need to play that IMDb guessing game, okay? And I thought that the two of you could compete, Tom and Ruth, to see who gets the most accurate guess.
Okay.
So just to recap, the previous film, Howling 4, The Original Nightmare, that was released in 1988,
mm-hmm.
and it scored a whopping 3.4 out of 10 on IMDb. So this film's made just 1 year later.
Again,
just 1 year later, 1989. Who would like to take a guess on the score? Up or down from 3.4?
Tom? I'm going to go... I'm still trying to be optimistic. I'm going to go up, but I'm going to go like 3.6.
Ruth?
I'm going to go more. I'm going to be really optimistic. 4.1.
Ruth wins. Ah. She's not quite dead on, but she's the closest. It's even better than that, guys. It's a 4.5, making this the second highest ranking Howling movie so far.
Well, bless my cotton socks. I'm excited now.
Fuck me. This one's going to be a banger, guys. I can feel it.
Should we do it?
Let's do it. Here we go. That was radical. Oh my God, guys, that was fantastic. Not all of the time, but certainly a lot of the time.
A lot more than the last one. Like, it's a completely different ballgame.
They certainly got their act together a bit.
They definitely didn't get their acting together.
What was the last one like if this one was so much better?
It was just boring as fuck, the last one. Like, nothing happened.
Yeah, honestly, Ruth, if you had been joining us to watch Howling 4 as your first ever horror film, I think you would be way more confused. You wouldn't have made it to the end. Whereas this one, you're here. You're right. And I can tell that you're a convert, right?
Totally into it.
And also, like, the last one had a lot more, like, gore in it. Whereas I feel like this was pretty... How did you feel about, like, the...
I looked away a couple of times. There was only...
No, you didn't. I kept a tally, Ruth. I kept a tally of how many times Ruth covered her eyes. You say a couple of times?
I'm going to go 4 times.
6.
Oh, that's not too bad.
That's respectable.
There was only one bit where I had to, like, ask if I was allowed to look back at the screen.
And to be fair, that bit was pretty full on, actually. Yeah, I think you were right to look away. But my God, I was on board with this one. It was like a murder mystery.
Mm.
It was like a stage play. It was like a sex comedy without any jokes.
Yeah.
It was all things.
It was
guys, who's with me, guys?
Yeah, I mean, it was a smorgasbord.
It was some things.
It was some things.
I don't know if it was all things, Todd. I think that might be over-egging it slightly.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of the things.
So one thing that's in it is Budapest, 1489. That's where the film opens up.
Yeah, I just want to point out that I did a little bit of snooping earlier. Yeah. The city of Budapest didn't exist in the year 1489.
Didn't it?
No, it's founded years later.
Oh, okay.
So straight off the bat, they're coming in hot. They've done their research.
Yeah, or like the place where Budapest then came to be.
Present day Budapest. Yeah. Well, what was it, in the city of Buda or the city of Pest? Because it wasn't formed until they joined, guys.
You mean? Are you saying that none of this happened?
I thought it was a fly on the wall documentary, guys. Right, look, okay, so we start in present-day Budapest, 1849. There is a big, spooky wooden cot. There's an awesome blood-red font. It says Howling 5, Rebirth. Put a pin in that for now because nothing got born once or twice. There was no birthing. There was no rebirth.
There was a little bit of talk about a baby at the beginning, and then everyone... And it was like near the end of the film. I was like, oh, yeah, what, babies?
Yeah, something to do with babies.
Basically, it's like the film opens up with the scene from the trailer where there's that that LARPing party where they're all like dressed, you know, like having a medieval banquet and everyone is dead.
It was like Shakespeare in the Park, wasn't it? But just like they're all lounging around, they're all dead, they're all in these like slightly budget medieval jackets, and there's a guy with a sword that is too big to be held by human hands, and he's like flying it around like it's just like a dinner fork or something, like it weighs nothing.
Yeah. And it's like him and his wife, I will assume, and they're like, are we all good? Is everybody dead? Yeah, everyone's dead. Even the baby's dead. Cool. Shall I impale us both on this massive big sword? And they do. It's like a double suicide stabbing.
It's romantic. It's very romantic.
It's very romantic. And like they just really go at it, these two. They're just like bellowing at each other the whole time. And then when they're lying there, like dead on this massive sword, they hear a baby crying. And they're like, no, we died in vain. Cut to 1989. Budapest.
At which point Ruth turns to me and Tom and goes, I went to Budapest once, it was lovely.
I did, it's true.
Just like in the film?
Exactly like in the film.
I have a thing to say, like the next two scenes that all happen. Right. Like, so basically we're like in Budapest, 1989, at a hotel, and we're introduced to quite a lot of characters in quick succession. We'll get to those in a bit. The first two we're introduced to, we're not sure if she's an actress or a musician called Gail. And then there is a photographer. What's the top?
His name's David Gillespie.
Oh, David Gillespie, the photographer. And like, so this woman is just walking down the canal and this dude just runs up and starts taking photos of her. And she's like, do I know you?
Back off, Jack.
Yeah, basically back the fuck off. And then he's kind of like, oh, actually, I do know you. So it's like he was just doing that. Like, it was just a coincidence that he knew her. He was just like running up to her. And it's like, hey, woman. Photograph, photograph, photograph. And then she's like, excuse me, do you have any kind of like social kind of like skills at all?
She was surprisingly cool about it.
Yeah, she was cool about it, even though this guy is just like, what is your deal? And then the next scene, we have this guy who's like a douchey 80s tennis pro with like a big lion's mane, kind of Bee Gees hair. And he goes and sits next to this this young woman in the hotel who's like listening to headphones. And he sits down and is like, is this seat taken? And then just leans over to her and grabs her headphones and rips them off of her head. He goes, is this seat taken? It's like, what is... So like the two very quick scenes, I'm like, do no men have social skills in this film? They're just like going up to people and just go like... Getting in the face!
Not in 1989, mate. Yeah. It was a dark time.
And then everyone suddenly starts to learn social skills, but I was just a bit weirded out by these two scenes.
Nobody has any social skills in this film. Like, who else do we have? We've got, like, there's the doctor lady who's played by... if you've seen Twin Peaks, she's played by the woman that plays Blackie O'Reilly in Twin Peaks. She's in this! And she plays a doctor who tries to order a drink and goes to the bar and is like... Give me a shmeminimer.
She just wants a vodka with a twist.
Vodka with a twist.
And then the barman is just like, blah.
I am Hungarian, I don't speak English. An Australian guy walks up, holds up a vodka with a twist, and he's like, oh, mate, one of these, yeah? Cool, that's how you communicate.
The men are all saving the day.
All the men are saving the women from themselves, yeah. It was good.
I mean, by being incredibly rude.
Yeah,
basically, just being like, there's a woman over there. I better go and insert myself into her life with great force because she obviously needs a man.
So super quick run through. Of the women, we don't have time to do like the full plot line of how they all come in. But so
I mean, there's not much.
We've got...
There's a Scandinavian actress.
Called Anna. She's got really cool clothes.
Yeah.
Lots of costume changes.
Yeah, she changes her costume in like every scene. There's the doctor lady who can't order a drink on her own. There's Mary Lou, who had her headphones ripped off. She's like a kind of a girl next door wannabe actress.
She's like, yeah, she's an actress, but she's always being cast as a bimbo.
Yeah.
She really looks up to the other actress, doesn't she? That sort of...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's a bit naive and...
They like try and get like a real kind of relationship going between... Like a friend, like a kind of a... You know, make a big thing about them bonding.
Yeah. Don't really buy it, though.
No, I mean, I don't really buy much of anything that happens.
No, I don't buy it because the woman playing a Scandinavian actress is a terrible actress, which I always, like, find a little bit amusing when someone's playing an actor in something and they just, oh no, I wonder what that read was like in the audition, like, to get that part.
Yeah. And then of the lads, we've got...
Tennis pro
who's, like, ripping headphones out of women's heads.
He seems like a bit of a simpleton. Just generic Australian.
Yeah, massive ponytail. I think there's some lines later that suggest he might be, like, a rock star or something, but he doesn't fucking look it.
Well, he looks like one of the guys at Status Quo.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
Status Quo.
Yeah. Who else is there? There's like a generic, like, yuppie.
Oh, he's the biggest prick, this guy.
What's his name?
Literally, every time he did anything in the film, I just noted him down as douchebag.
Oh, his name's Richard. But
he
douchebag is...
pre-established relationship with the doctor.
Yeah, so when we first see douchebag, he's at the hotel with a much older woman who is his
wife. I
was
really hoping it was his mum, but...
Oh, she's not his mum. He like buys her a box of chocolates and is like, go off to your hotel, I'm off on an adventure.
Mm.
And he is there because he's having a fling with Dr. Lady, right?
Yeah. I think that's all of our cast, like the main cast, and the reason they're all in Budapest is they've been invited to the opening of a castle.
Hey!
That's a thing.
Big Hollywood event. Come to Budapest for the opening of a 500-year-old castle.
Yeah.
Come one, come all. Famous actresses, wannabe actresses, Australian rock stars, doctors and douchebags alike. They'll all be there.
Yeah. Oh, there's also, there's another character, a historian called William.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, generic old man.
Just some geezer. And basically, they all get on a bus out to this castle, and they get taken by the Count.
Straight away, when the Count came on, we were like, he seems nice.
Yeah, sure nothing suspicious is going to go on with this guy, with like a name like the Count.
He's in a suit, he's very short, he looks quite serious.
Quite and he's pale. Like,
very pale, yeah. I can only assume a Hungarian accent, but...
Oh, it slipped, I think. It was all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it really does. And, like, I think it's like he's saying that the castle, I think, is in his family and he's reopening it. I don't know what. He basically just says, I'm doing it for, like, the tourist money.
Yeah.
And you've all been invited to spend the night in the castle. What a lovely thing that everyone wants to do. And they show up at the castle and it is a shithole.
Yeah, it's like, totally decrepit. They're all gathered around the fire, and he starts telling the story that we saw in the very first scene of the film. He's like, yes, 500 years ago, an entire family all committed suicide here, all on the same night, except for one baby who was whisked away by the Prince Regent the next day and never seen again. Lunch, anyone?
Yeah, and they have their drinks in a room that basically looks like a dungeon, but just with chaise longues everywhere. Like,
beautiful.
It's because everybody that's going to this thing just seems like... like a real up themselves kind of arsehole. Like most of them seem like very offish people.
Oh,
so I can't
God.
Imagine any of them showing up at this like really like shabby castle and being like, oh, fabulous. I'm really glad I came all the way to Budapest.
They had to get on like a minibus to get there. Like that was at the first point you would have lost those people. Like they literally put them on a like shit little coach.
A national rail coach.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, it's like, right, let's get on the megabus out to my castle.
And then as soon as they get there, they start having the weakest party bants ever. They're all just like walking around going like, oh yes, of course, aren't we all wearing a mask underneath, don't you know? I think everybody is all pretending to be someone else. Well, yes, as an actress, that's what I do for a living. Well, yes, as a psychologist, that's what I understand everybody to be doing. More canapes, more.
Well, it's basically an exposition party, isn't it? Where they all explain to each other like, yes, hello, and what's your motivation? My motivation is that I'm a very self-serving actress. It's like, she is a young, aspiring actress, but perhaps a little bit simple, but looking for love in all the wrong places. Like, and then like the historian is like, there's a mystery here. There's a mystery. Let me tell you about, like, you know, the history of this castle. It's a bit fishy. And then somebody else also just, like, starts having a conversation about, like, about the nature of werewolves. It's like, this is not a conversation that a bunch of, like, actresses and actors and, like, musicians have when they're, like, on a jolly to a castle. Like, they'd all just be like, so who brought the cocaine? Like, rather than, like, so, any werewolf enthusiasts in the room?
I think it's clear the Australian brought the cocaine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they like have a bit of banter. A blizzard sets in and the Count tells them they're all trapped in the castle. At which point the historian is like, I want to have a snoop around while everyone else is having lunch. He starts telling them this story about how years ago the locals said that Satan was in control of that area and used to run with the wolves at night. At which point, one of the actresses says, wow, Satan was a werewolf? At which point, the historian should have said, that's not really what I said, actually.
Oh, yeah. So, like, let's maybe have a little dip into the Rules Corner.
Rules Corner.
Ow. So, I just want to pick up on this bit for Rules Corner because it actually ties in with some of the stuff that was set up in Howling 2 and 4.
What?
Yeah.
Consistency?
Like, yeah, there's actual consistency in this film because they say, like, oh no, werewolves didn't start in Transylvania like they did in Howling 2, which is obviously, like, no one else has ever said that werewolves have started in Transylvania other than in Howling 2. And then they pick up on the whole thing that it's a curse, that it's demonic possession that is a werewolf. It's not, like, it's not a curse from anywhere else. It's not a bloodline thing. Although it does kind of say it's a bloodline thing a bit later on. So it's like it's a demonic curse and a bloodline thing.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a bit. I don't want to discuss that bit just yet.
They also play quite fast and loose with the thing we were talking about with you, Ruth, in the start of the episode about when the wolves change, because there's this wolf, like, you know, spoiler alert, guys, a few people get bumped off by a wolf in this castle, a werewolf, no less. And this wolf is kind of coming and going, changing whenever it needs to kill, and then like disappearing back into the crowd. And yet right at the end of the film, when they're trying to track down who this werewolf is so they can kill it, they're like, we must find them before the full moon reveals itself. Otherwise they will change into a werewolf.
Yeah.
What, like they've been doing on and off for the last 80 minutes.
Yeah, that's... So there was some consistency while also poking some holes in the rules that have already been established. So
I would expect nothing less.
Yeah.
Maybe the wolf just has control over itself when the moon isn't around, but when the moon comes, it doesn't anymore.
Nice. Yeah.
Is that a rule?
I'll like with it. That. New rule. Like, write it down.
I like your moxie. That is... Thank you for writing the the writers of Howling 5 out of a hole.
Is that the end of Rules Corner?
Yeah, I think... I mean, there's not a lot in the way of new rules brought in here, is there?
No, there is one that we will save till the end of the episode when we get to like the big final,
like,
revelation.
It's kind of like the bloodline thing. We'll discuss that. But like, it kind of... Yeah, it's weird that it does hold on to some of the things that were set up in like in 2 and 4, like some quite weird installments of the franchise, while also that whole full moon thing is a little bit wonky.
At which point historian bro decides to wander out on his own, and he's going deeper into the castle, into the catacombs of the castle. And then
the super amazing generic dungeony catacombs that have chains hanging off
everything's smoky and lit green for some reason.
He like finds a skull just in the corner, and he kind of like picks it up and goes, ooh, puts it back and like just pats it on the head like it was a dog.
Yeah, amazing. Like that. And then he gets killed by a fucking wolf. Oh my god, oh no.
Didn't see it coming.
You don't really see the wolf. It's like a POV camera shot chases him down. He's like, my god. He checks the doors are all locked, and then he's dead. At which point, I need to check in with our pal Ruth. First death of the film, first proper horror film you've watched. How are you feeling at this point?
It was okay, wasn't it?
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, there wasn't much kind of detail.
No,
I wasn't too upset
sometimes
about him, to be honest. So I think it was okay. You know, I was fine. It was fine for him to go.
Because he was old? That's horrible.
No, more because he was ugly. No, not really. I hadn't got to know him. You know, he was a new guy in my life.
I mean, this is a thing with the film that has all these characters in it, and it was really difficult trying to work out who to root for.
We were constantly trying to guess who the hero or the heroine was.
Because it felt more like a slasher film, because there's so many characters and they're all going to a secluded, you know, like there's a fucking blizzard, they're all trapped there. So everyone's going to die. It's going to be more like a slasher thing. So you're like, well, someone's got to survive it, surely. Who's it going to be? And every time you thought you'd settled on whoever it was going to be, they then ended up dying. And then you just got to the point where it's like, but everyone's rubbish now. Like, how many of these people going to be the hero?
Yeah, we've only got douchebag. We've got the horrible lady, and then like the count left.
Yeah,
none of them are going to be the hero.
I thought it was going to be Gail, that she was going to be.
So Gail is the lady that we saw walking along the river at the start that got accosted by the photographer.
Yeah, I thought that she was going to survive, and she's also like the most kind of like savvy of the group. She feels that there's something up. Yeah, she's just got like a feeling that the count is hiding something.
She was trying to rally the troops as well. She was trying to get everybody to be like, we don't need to stay here. There's something going on. Just because there's blizzard, we can go. I know there's something happening, man.
Yeah, and then she goes looking for...
I think the professor?
Yeah, like the historian guy who's disappeared. Doesn't she kind of like go off with the Australian guy?
She goes to get changed into her jeans.
Oh, yeah, she goes and gets changed into her jeans, and there's like she thinks there's a werewolf in her room. Yeah. So that's why she's like thinks that something is up.
Now, speaking of something being up, there was something seriously up with this scene, right? So for the listeners at home, what happens is Gail decides that she needs to go investigating, so she has to change into her investigation jeans, which she's got in her suitcase. Yeah, so she walks into a private room, closes the door, and I can't remember what she was wearing before. Was it trousers or just a dress or something? I can't remember.
She basically came out in the same outfit, but just with jeans.
Yeah. But so there's this bit where she's basically like pulling her jeans on, and nobody looks glamorous pulling jeans on, right? I don't care who you are. And at this exact point that she's pulling these jeans on, like someone comes into the room behind her and she goes, "You're being very rude. Can't you see I'm changing in here?" And then the person leaves.
That's not what she said.
Sorry. Do you want to have a go? Do you want to have a punt?
No, sorry. I shouldn't have.
Something along those lines. And then she goes out, and sat right outside the door is Douchebag, the guy in the suit, the rich guy that's cheating on his wife, the awful guy, the biggest villain, sat directly outside this door, just like casually looking off into the distance, going boobity-boo, boobity-boo. And she looks at him and goes, Did someone just walk into this room? And he goes, oh no, nothing like that. And she goes, oh, okay then, that's weird. It was must be a mystery. Whereas anyone else in the world would be like, oi, dickhead, did you just come into this room?
Yeah.
You're obviously an asshole.
Well, maybe she just takes things more at face value.
She's too trusting.
She is too trusting, and then she...
That's why she's too
curious, and she goes and gets killed when she kind of goes off and does a bit of investigating with...
I can't really remember her death, Gail's death. Can anyone remember Gail's death?
Does she get caught... basically, they find a secret passage in one of the rooms. The Aussie finds it while he is wandering around just drinking beer and just, like, leaving beer cans everywhere he goes because Australia...
And then, like, I love the Australians.
Yeah, he's great. And then, like, he opens up this secret tunnel and, like, kind of, like, just goes, like, well, I'm drunk, can't see anything bad happening down here. And he just goes down this tunnel, and the door closes behind him, and he goes back and he looks through a hole in the wall, and I think he sees Gail...
Yes, you're right!
...get killed, but by an unseen assailant.
But who she knows.
Yes. Yeah, because she's trying to talk to them. And what happened? What does she say?
She's like, oh, it's you. I was trying to... She just makes it obvious that she's met them and she feels comfortable
she's
around
like, hey,
them.
Hey, don't latch the door.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Like, hey, don't murder me with your big hairy hands. Whoa! and then the Aussie just kind of goes, ah, bonza. Walks off. Kind of like... He ends up sort of like finding his way outside of the castle. And then he gets nobbled by a werewolf as well.
This is quite good. You see, like, a full body wolf suit jump out of a snowbank. Like, it bursts. No, but it bursts through like a fucking brick wall or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Smashes the bricks, jumps out. And at which point I just wrote in my notes, Snow Wolf! In like huge letters.
Yeah. Oh, and every time that a werewolf kills someone, we get this insane, like, little music stab.
It's like from The Omen.
And then that it just suddenly like leaps out of nowhere, goes, ho, ho, ho! Done. Okay, and then you show you a picture of the castle and we're back to the action. And it's just really jarring whenever that happens in the film, but it's good. I'm into it. Now, people have started going missing, and everyone in like the house just kind of goes like, well, we should probably go and look for them, I guess, because, oh, I don't fucking know. People have gone missing. The film dictates that everyone should split up and go walking around in the labyrinth, and they all split up man is trying to have sex with woman doesn't want to, and it's like, these are the groups that we'll go in.
Ruth pointed this out. All of the characters get paired together in terms of predatory male and the subject of his affections, and they all get sent off down a maze.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Everything
goes wrong.
Everything goes wrong.
I think the best, my favourite bit, possibly in the film and like out of these pairings, is Tennis Bro and our young naive actress, Mary Lou. So they both don't come off as too bright, and you've already had this scene in like a sauna or no, like a hot spring where
It's the side boob room.
The side boob room.
It's where, the room where you go to have a side boob.
Yeah, where like the two of them are like are sharing a bath, and she's getting into the bath and goes, oh, I thought it was only in Japan where people like shared bath naked. And he's like, oh, no, you definitely do it in Hungary too. Definitely, definitely. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And he tries it on with her and she doesn't like it. And then they get, he's like, oh, great, stranded in this tunnel with her. Gonna really
prove. But something happens that is so upsetting to her that she screams and jumps out of the bath, spa, whatever it is. But yeah, like 10 minutes later, she's quite happy to wander down a dark tunnel with him.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
I know, like, and like that is a really weird scene where like suddenly it's not like you see what he does. So literally that it cuts to the scene and you just get her screaming like bloody murder, jumping out and him going, no, no, no.
Yeah. Swing and a miss.
Yeah, well, could have quite possibly in the swing and a miss because they were naked in that tub. And then they, yeah, then they're walking down this corridor and they've got this whole system of like drawing arrows on the walls in chalk.
I think it's really important how much they're hyping up this maze, right? There's this, because there's this maze underneath the castle. There's this hilarious line where one of them says, listen here, there's 9 of us. That maze was designed to confuse 20 times that number. I was like, that's not really how mazes work. It's not like if you have more people, the maze needs to be more confusing.
It's not like you know, like having like a venue and like depending on your capacity, you have to have more fire exits. But it's kind of like, okay, how many people we got coming? Oh, well, if we need to confuse that many, then we need this amount of square footage. Not how mazes work.
And so was the point of the castle, like they were like, we need to have a maze so that if invaders come from underneath, they'll be confused.
In the basement, it's like, why wouldn't you put, like, say, a labyrinth around your castle or something?
I'm just saying invest that time and energy in, like, maybe better, like, diplomacy so you don't get attacked.
Yeah, they just obviously had a real thing for mazes. Like, the king was mad drunk on, like, maze lust. It's like, I put mazes in everything.
It's my thing.
But they're like walking around, like, the tunnels. And they've got this, like, so they don't get lost. They draw chalk arrows on the walls to point which direction they've already been in. And, like, you just get this really great shot of the guy, like, with this bit of chalk, like, really, like, having a go at drawing this arrow on the wall. And goes, yeah, there. That ought to about do it. He's so chuffed with himself putting this arrow on. And then Mary Lou is like, I'm pretty sure that we've been down this way before. And it's like, no, because the arrow's on this side. It's like, yeah, but I think we've been down it the other way. I think something's in here with us and it's been rubbing out the arrows. And then he's kind of like, do you think? And he just walks over and looks on the other wall, on the other side of the tunnel. Sees a rubbed out arrow, goes, oh shit, we're all fucked, and then just charges off down the hallway, like basically pushes Mary Lou over, and she's like, no, wait, come back. He's fucking gone. He is out of there. At which point it then changes to like a POV wolf cam that's just, and he's absolutely pegging it down there. And basically he gets killed by a wolf, but I just love his cowardice. It is amazing. Just
this guy.
Oh shit, we're like the knee jerk reaction of like a rubbed out cross, like arrow on a wall. Like, we're doomed!
Save yourselves! Every man for himself! Fuck this guy.
Yeah. So he dies, and you know, you're not really sad to see him go.
Now, at which point, I feel like it's time to check in again with our pal Ruth. We're a few deaths in at this point. They've been fairly consistent. The tone is building, though. The tension is building. We've got a lot of gothic atmosphere laying on top. We've got castles. We've got chains. We've got dead bodies. We've got a blizzard. We've got a count. We've got sexual intrigue. We've got history, medieval shit. Like, something. Oh, it's all going off. How were you, Ruth? Were you scared?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't be surprised, no.
No. There were those odd moments of sort of tension, but generally... No. I would have been scared if I'd been there with those idiots. Like, it was quite an amazing show of kind of
idiocy.
Yeah,
it was terrible, but no, I don't think so. I wasn't fearful.
Were you scared for any of the characters? Did you feel like that you did, like, because you said that you didn't care about the historian getting killed because
he was old
and ugly and you hadn't been introduced to him.
It's a joke, guys.
But
So, like, we've been introduced now to, like, Mary Lou and Tennis Bro. They, you know, we've spent a little bit of time with them, figured out what they're about. Did anyone, like, sort of, like, tug at your heartstrings and be like, God, I really hope they get out of this okay?
No one was very nice, were they? I don't think I liked any of them.
What was wrong with Mary Lou? Oh, no, Mary Lou is the sweetest one, like, of the cast.
She was a bit stupid, I think, wasn't she? Like, she never...
She was naive.
You didn't really find out much about her until the end, I wouldn't say.
No. Yeah, she was just... She wanted to be an actress, that was all.
I think this is a partly, like, the problem... I appreciate why it is trying to hide, kind of, like, who the main character is. It's trying to keep you guessing and, like, keep the mystery going. But it does mean that you don't really get to sit with the characters very much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if these characters would have been more likable in 1989. You know, like, sort of, like, yuppie culture was more of a thing and, like, being an... You know, a self-absorbed dickhead was more acceptable. But, like, now I just watch it and be like, I don't know, just kill them all? Could we kill them all? We'll probably kill them all.
On this point, I wonder if this is a good time for us to open up the trophy cabinet and dust off that very special award that we like to give every episode of this season, the Bitter End Endy Award, which is our Oscars for Enthusiasm. Okay, Ruth, I want to know, who do you think was the most enthusiastic person in this film that deserves our award for pure enthusiasm? They don't have to be good, they just have to have tried as hard as they could, damn it.
I think the Australian guy.
Oh, yes! I love that guy, that's who I was rooting for.
He had an excellent ponytail.
It was like down to his arse.
A really great cropped jacket. And at one point he said, "Fair dinkum." Like, yeah. What more do you want from an Australian?
That is worth the award alone. Yeah, there's also a bit where, like, I don't know, you find something, you just go, "Oh, stone the crows."
Yeah, he's excellent.
Do you think he was even a real Australian?
No.
That's how much he was, like, throwing at this movie.
Do you think, like, he wasn't even written as an Australian and, like, the actor was just like, "I've just got a feeling about this character, darling. I just really feel he comes from the land down under. Could I? I just want to try something in this next take. Could I say fair dinkum?"
I just felt the truth of it then.
Yeah.
He also has this really good soliloquy. Like, not a lot of, like, in a movie that is about people in a big spooky house, like, all kind of getting split up and going off in pairs. The one bit where we see Ray, the Australian rock star, where he's on his own. You better believe he's got more lines in the scene when he's on his own than when any of the other scenes. And he's just having a game of cricket with himself with an empty beer can.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's great. It's probably, like, more Australian action in this film than there was in the whole of, like, the marsupial. He is, like, representing for all Australian stereotypes really hard.
I've got to say, I was so surprised when he died as early as he did.
With a lot of, like, the characters that you kind of, like, get drawn to, they, like, it's basically like him and Gail. I had my money on kind of surviving, and then, well, I think we should probably, like, trundle on to the end a bit, because basically what happens is, like,
they get
I like the mystery element, but the film does end up being about 45 minutes of people going back down to the same set and just, like, wandering around it in different pairs, just being like, "Should we go and have another look in the catacombs of the castle? Yes, we'll do that."
Wait for someone else to die.
Yeah, wait for someone else to die. There's a bit where they... like, to kind of make people think it's going to be someone different at different times, when really, generally, it's like the Count. Everyone pretty much... You just kind of feel like the whole way through it's going to be the Count.
Count's also got these two spooky servants who speak no English, only Hungarian. They've got the very, very Hungarian names of Peter and Susan. And they're skulking around in the shadows, not talking to anybody.
Yeah, so they seem suspicious.
Peter's got a knife. He's constantly holding this knife.
Mm.
It's like, it's one of these knives. It's more like an ice pick. It's like a sink, like a big long knitting needle or something. To the point that when he came on screen once, I felt compelled to write down in my notebook, "Peter's rad little stabber."
And so basically they just kind of, like, wander around the castle, some people get killed off, and then we basically kind of like come to the, because it's like a mystery thing, we get to the accusing section of the film where everyone's like, you, I think you're the werewolf, I think you're the werewolf, and it all comes out what's actually been going on here. So who have we got left? We've got like the photographer, we've got the doctor,
we've got Mary Lou,
who is asleep for a lot of like the end of the film. She's
for
like,
no reason.
She just goes like, I'm a bit tired.
I'm a bit tired, guys. Can you just guys just sort out this murderer thing and I'll be up for the breakfast.
The Scandinavian actress Anna. And then we've got like, and then we've got the Count and his two servants. And so this is the next bit of the rules, basically.
Rules Corner Rewind.
Whoa. Right. So we mentioned that there is a bloodline element in here. What keeps on popping up throughout the film is that everybody has the same birthmark on their arm.
It's a little triangle in the crook of their elbow.
Yeah.
A perfect triangle.
And the Count is saying that they were all, it was all engineered, like it wasn't up to chance that they would all come here and they would all have these triangles. That he, I think that they're all meant to be descendants of that one baby that got away in like the 1400s after the big massacre.
Yeah, they were trying to eliminate their own bloodline.
Yes.
And they failed because the baby survived, guys.
And that bloodline had werewolves in it. Shock horror. So basically, they've all been lured there by the Count and his secret society called the Martyrs, who have existed like since the 1400s to try and wipe out werewolves. So it's like, we brought you all here because basically one of you is a werewolf and the werewolf one would hunt down and kill you all anyway. So, which one of you is it? I'm going to kill you.
And they're all orphans.
Which... Oh, yes, that's it. They're all orphans as well.
But maybe that's because they're... if they... He reassured them when he told them about this by saying that they were going to die anyway because somebody, like, oh, the werewolf would find them wherever they were in the world and kill them. So that must be what had happened to their parents. All their parents have been killed by werewolves.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Because, yeah, so, that makes sense.
So, because I know that, yeah, there's this line he has, which is, there's only one werewolf and it can only be destroyed by one of its own, someone who bears the mark. So the werewolf has this birthmark and only someone else with the identical
and
birthmark
the Count
can
has
kill
the,
it.
Has the birthmark.
Count's one of them as well. So are you saying that, because I get that the Count brought them all together in the castle so that all of them could figure out who the one werewolf is and turn on them and kill the werewolf.
Yeah.
But are you saying that if he hadn't done that, the werewolf would have tracked down everybody with the birthmark?
Yes.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's like in Highlander.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. So, so now it's this thing of like, who is it? The Count is saying that David the photographer is the werewolf and David is saying that it's the Count.
At which point the Count says, there's an ancient Hungarian saying, check the one who looks the most innocent. About 2 minutes later, someone says, where's Mary Lou? And they went, oh, she's up in bed.
Yeah, this is the point where like you just go, it's Mary Lou.
It's Mary Lou, guys.
It's Mary Lou. It's Mary Lou. She's definitely, definitely the one. So then, like, the end of the film is just waiting for the inevitable bit when Mary Lou kills them all. And she does. Like, basically, she finishes off Anna and the doctor.
Yeah, in, like, fairly unmemorable kills.
Yeah. Most, like, a lot of the kills in this are fairly unmemorable. Apart from one that, oh my god,
booyah!
Todd, I feel that you might want to talk about this kill.
Oh, guys, I have been gagging for a good on-screen kill for a couple of movies now, and this one is a humdinger. This one is so good that Ruth's eyes were double hand on hand closed.
Did not like it.
And it was a full-on, is it safe to look now? Now, did you see any of it?
No, I saw the, like... run up and I just knew that it wasn't going to be good.
You were no fool.
Yeah, it looked pretty bad going in.
So it's a fairly complicated situation. So this is after the Count has basically declared war on David Gillespie, the photographer. He's basically said, he's the werewolf, everybody get him. So the Count's two Hungarian servants, a man and a woman, Peter and Susan, they're like doing his bidding. They're doing his evil bidding. So Susan is trying to kill David with the cheeky little stabber. And they're wrestling and they're wrestling and they're wrestling and they're wrestling. At which point, Peter, the other servant, comes through. And he's got a fucking axe, guys. He's got like a just a like a little one-handed wood axe. And he's like looking really mean. He's like, nothing's going to hold him back. He's like, this is the moment I've been waiting for, yeah? This is what I was trained for. This is it. My dad is going to be so proud of me wherever he is. And he's running through and he takes his big swing. At which point, David goes, I might duck that. And he ducks. And then... One servant chops the other servant fucking head right off. Head comes off, flies into the air, bit of blood, booyah! At which point, the servant that chopped the other servant's head off goes like, oh no, I didn't mean to do that. At which point, his chest explodes and he's been shot in the back with a crossbow by fucking Mary Lou. Booyah! Combo, pow, pow, 1-2 punch, double death. Good night, nurse.
Yeah, it was... Oh, it's a powerhouse scene.
Oh, I've got a right sweat on now.
I know.
Just from recounting that, I got very excited.
I mean, that's one of the most exciting bits. Other than, like, the tennis guy, it's like him just, like, charging down that hallway and that. Those are, like, the two best bits in the film for me.
We get some good shots of the headless body lying on the floor and, like, the other body piled on top with an arrow coming out. Now, you saw those, Ruth. Were you okay with those?
It's okay, yeah. It looked... unreal.
Do you mean that it looked shit?
No, it just, yeah, that was fine. But I'm glad I looked away at that point. I don't think I wanted to see that scene that you just described so beautifully.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so basically, we've now just got, like, Mary Lou is just, like, trotting around the castle somewhere, and we're... at home, just kind of like, just be a werewolf now, we know. Whereas you've got this like cat and mouse sling between the Count and David Gillespie, trying to hunt each other down. And like they have a bit of a ruckus, and Mary Lou is there with this gun, and they're like, no, shoot him, he's the werewolf. No, he's the werewolf. And then she shoots the Count.
Which you don't even see. She does it off camera, and there's no shot of the Count's body.
Yeah, you just see like David Gillespie walk up and go like, thanks for that. And then, like, they have a bit of a hug, and she's like, oh, don't you believe in the werewolves thing? And he, like, because David Gillespie's been firmly against the prospect of werewolves, like, this whole film's like, that's ridiculous. It's probably, he doesn't offer up any other, it's just like, it's the Count, he's just bad. And he's like, no, that's ridiculous. I don't believe in werewolves, do you? And she's like, I guess not. And then she, like, well, you get a lot of shots of, like, the full moon revealing itself. And then she, like, looks into the camera and has a little smirk. Freeze frame. Credits roll. So you never get to see her, like, actually wolf out. So should we have a little dip into Wolves Corner to talk about what's going on with the wolves in this thing?
I think we're going to have to. Let's play the jingle.
Wolves Corner.
You know what happens with wolves in this? Not a lot.
You don't see a lot of wolves. I think they do a good job of, like, kind of teasing it out, you know? You see little bits of wolves.
There's no payoff, though. That's what bugged me. Like, there's, like, a really cool, like, silhouette shot of, like, a wolf walking down, like, one of the corridors in, like, the catacombs. That was really cool. Like, you get a lot of, like, silhouettes and, like, the odd close-up of like a mouth or eyes.
There's a lot of mouths like zooming into the camera, a lot of mouths like coming right at you.
So am I correct to assume that there's, in such a world as this, there is only one werewolf? It's not like Mary Lou would have had backup in some way, you know, because I'm just kind of impressed with her logistics. And you know, she got that pale pink jumper back on immaculately every time in between kills.
Because yeah, from what we can see of the wolf is physically very large, yeah, right? Smash down a wall, you know, really fast as well, chasing them down. Mary Lou, obviously very small person, like, she, you know, she's probably the shortest person in the castle other than the Count. Mm. And she's in bed that whole time, and her clothes remain constantly intact.
And when she kills Gale, she must be able to turn into a werewolf, like, on a dime. She's just like, because Gale's there like, oh, hey, you're here. Oh, don't shut the door.
Yeah.
Arr, dead. Like, so it must be lightning fast.
Well, my
she
point...
can take that pink jumper off so quickly. It must be like Breakaway. I imagine
Velcro.
It's got like
it was the 80s. It was
Oh, that would be amazing.
Well, that's the thing. She must, like, fully on and off every single time before she changes. Now, in other Howling films, we've seen the change when the person changes from a human to a wolf, and it takes fucking ages.
Mm.
They do these big long effect shot where it goes on for ages, and you see their snout come through, and they slowly grow hair, and they go, "Wow."
She's just efficient. She just gets the job done.
Super quick. Yeah.
Hey, this is 1989. You got to move with the times.
So I
think it's a bit disappointing in terms of, like, if you actually wanted to watch this film and see werewolves, you don't. You never have that monster, like, payoff shot.
It's quite good having it always be in the shadows, though. It's a bit more like Ridley Scott's Alien or something like that. It doesn't quite have the...
Even that, though, has a reveal.
Yeah, there's no reveal.
At the end. And so I enjoyed this film, like, way more than, like, the last one. And for the most part, I think that it did something a bit new with, like, for a Howling film. I liked the mystery, slashery kind of thing. I think that was cool. But when she looked in the camera and smirked and the credits rolled, I did throw my notebook down in frustration because there was no, like, I was kind of like, well, where's the wolves? I know that there were, it's different from Howling 4, where there's just, like, no wolves at all for, like, the bulk of the film, and then they throw them all at you in 10 minutes. You know that there's a wolf out there and it's doing things. Like, the wolf is an active entity in the film, but you just don't see it ever, like, in a way that is fully satisfying come the end of the film.
I want to know, because me and Tom have trawled through a lot of hours of this. Ruth, did you want to see the wolf by this point? Were you like, okay, I'm ready, I want to see, like, a proper shot of the wolf? Or were these little snatches of it kind of enough for you to, like, build up a mental picture?
I think they were enough for me.
Yeah, so you didn't feel cheated by the end?
Oh, I think the end was a bit crap because, yeah, you wanted to see her particularly be a wolf, I guess, and, like, kind of finish the story rather than just her creepy little smirk.
Yeah, it just feels like maybe they ran out of money to do one final effects shot or something.
But, like, they obviously had this wolf suit. It was just, I guess maybe transforming her into the logistics of transforming small little Mary Lou into, like, this great big werewolf was technically too difficult. I don't know.
I think they thought they were being sort of elegant or something in the
maybe. I mean, this was straight to
ending.
This was straight to video, so I'd imagine that they were trying to...
Budgets were low.
Yeah, I think so. They'd blown it all on Anna's wardrobe. So
Anna's wardrobe, and I gotta say, the set, the castle, I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, and they obviously thought so, because you, like, the film does just run on a loop of them just going through the same location. I know it is all set in this one space, but you do feel that you're just seeing a lot of it. Like, that,
yeah,
that, of like those, like, three rooms of the catacombs with their, like, different combinations of people walking through.
It made for a really good tone, though, that, like, murder mystery kind of campy gothic tone, which, you know, previous films in this series have been lacking a bit of subtlety, some of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one was subtle, you know? It was a subtle film.
Comparatively.
Comparatively. For better or worse.
Yeah, no, but I think that worked. I think that the Howling 4 was trying to be a more subtle film, and for the large part of it, failed in being, like, watchable and compelling. Like, I enjoyed watching this.
Yeah, Howling 4 was just boring until the werewolves turned up, whereas this one, we didn't really get werewolves, and I wasn't bored. I wanted to see what was going to happen. I wanted to see who, you know, they kept the rhythm was going. Sort of every, 10 minutes, somebody disappeared. Mm. Every time somebody disappeared, it was slightly surprising. Like, the people that were left at the end weren't necessarily who we thought were going to be left at the end.
Yeah. So, like, about werewolves and things, like, so, Ruth, obviously you don't like horror films.
No.
How do you feel about werewolves? Like, do you think that werewolves are scary? Because I don't think, like, werewolves ever, like, get, like, I don't think werewolves have ever, like, been, like, a super, like, popular or sexy kind of, like, supernatural thing. It's not like vampires or zombies. I think a lot of that is, like, I think they're quite hard to do, like, because I think that they look a bit shit quite a lot of the time. Yeah. Do you think the werewolves are scary, or, like,
Well, I mean, the idea of getting kind of ripped apart by a giant kind of scary dog thing is not very nice. And I guess it's the transformation. The scariness for me probably hinges on the fact, like, that they played upon in the film of it could be anybody. You don't know who is transforming into this monster. So, but I don't know. I get it. They're very they're not very glamorous, and like,
they're
guess
not a sexy monster.
What you're saying? Well, that's literally because of the like sex appeal element, isn't it? I guess so. With like vampires and well, I don't know, like human based
zombies. Zombies aren't sexy.
Although,
but I think
don't they try and make them sexy?
They like the post-apocalyptic setting of zombies, don't they?
Yeah. Whereas like werewolves are a bit kind of removed, yeah, a bit more removed from reality. But I mean, they can be really scary. But it kind of, I think, just because of the nature of the transformation and like all the prosthetics that are involved, that they either really work or they really don't.
Well, it's interesting in the original old black and white Wolfman with Lon Chaney Jr. You haven't seen that, have you?
No.
So the idea in that is the central character is the werewolf, and he gets attacked right at the start of the film, and then he knows that when the full moon comes around, he's going to turn into a werewolf. So straight away, the horror is slightly shifted. It's not about something's going to come and eat me. It's about what am I going to do? It's about like losing control of yourself and not being able to do it. It becomes even worse because he finds out that part of the curse, because they call it a curse, is that when he turns into a werewolf, he's going to go straight to try and hunt out the person he loves the most. And
it's bad times.
It is bad times. But so straight away, that puts you in this very different kind of headspace of like how the film then plays out. So he's always trying to keep people at arm's length. He's trying to lock himself up when every time the full moon goes. And obviously, it ends very badly. And quite a few werewolf films have played out that same story. And one thing that's different about The Howling, which at first, with the first few of these, I was like really into it that it was different, but now I'm starting to understand it's maybe just not as good. We've never really had one of these films yet where that horror kind of comes from, oh my God, I'm a werewolf?
Yeah.
I'm one of these things? What? So it's always about people being hunted out, which worked really, really well in this one, but I kind of want to know a bit more of Mary Lou's story. I want to know, was she conscious of what she was doing? Did she know when she was hunting and killing people? And then going back to bed, was she like being sneaky? Or did she just have no idea?
She didn't seem bothered, did she?
Until the spooky smile at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, she seemed like she was having a right old time.
Yeah. So that...
And she did get to kill the like prick that ripped her headphones out and was like perving all over her pretty quickly, so... That does make sense.
She almost went straight for him.
Yeah, whatever he did in that bath.
Big mistake.
Crossed a fucking line. And he got his throat ripped out for it. God.
Well, that's kind of the film, guys. I think we should probably tuck this little puppy to bed. Little quick final whip round the table. I'm going to say I liked it. Tom?
I liked it, yeah.
Ruth?
Yeah, I had a nice time.
It was a fun old romp.
You seem to be, like, for someone who doesn't like horror, you seem to be getting on with it pretty well.
Well, I think it was fun enough and quite silly, and there was some excellent 80s fashion that I think was a nice distraction for me.
Jacket game was on really point in this. Game. Big jackets.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a bit worried that we are now with the next film that me and Tom are going to watch next week. No more 80s.
No.
I believe it is a 90s film. It's called Howling 6, The Freaks!
Oh my God. I hope this is really, as this was very 80s, I want it to be super, super 90s. I want it to be, like, proper, like, MTV, like, 90s plaid. I want it to be, like, a grunge werewolf film.
I want it to have Puck from the Real World in it. I do believe it is set on a circus, in a circus freak show.
Nice.
That sounds bad.
Sounds pretty 90s, you know, like the Jim Rose freak show, perhaps?
Although, mentally, me, thinking it through what I might expect to see, I'm wondering if it's going to be bringing back some of that original Wolfman element.
Quite possibly.
You know, travelling freak show, story, you know, are we going to get the story of a sad, reluctant werewolf in here?
Oh, yeah, quite possibly.
You know, trapped in the freak show, forced to perform and wolf out for money.
Yeah, I mean, we can probably only be disappointed by whatever they give us, and it turns out it's
Not that nice idea that you had just then. But we'll see.
As usual, I am Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
And we've been joined by our special guest, Ruth.
Thanks. I had a lovely time.
I'm glad to hear it. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please tune in next time. And don't forget, you can tweet us at Bitter End Pod or find us on Facebook at Bitter End Pod. It's always nice to hear from you. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.